Hello, welcome to the Take Note podcast. This is Anamara Das, and we're also with Kaylee Kanada and our wonderful guest today, Vroj Sundari. Thank you so much for being with us. The Take Note podcast. We are our goal is to really, you know, as the title kind of indicates, it kind of alludes to, we take note of the special intricacies and wonderful details of the divine and his creative, you know, interlaying throughout our life, and how through creativity, how through the aesthetics, how through taking pause and thoughtfulness, we can appreciate more and more the beauty of life and deepen and enrich our experience of it. And so today with our special guest, Vroj Sundari, I'll let Kelly introduce her.
I just want to say, Ananda, you're really good at doing that, at the welcoming thing.
I mean, it's you know, I have to confess, it was kind of off the cuff.
No, it's good though, but I definitely feel like it's part of your dharma to do that kind
be
of
be off
like,
the cuff.
Just, yeah, just like you're a good improviser.
Good.
I'm usually a good improviser, but I've actually got some notes here, Vroj.
It's in line with our name.
So I thought that we're trying to step up on the Take Note podcast, and Vroj Sundari is such an exalted person. I decided to actually find out a little bit more about her. So just to let all of you know who we're speaking with. So Vroj Sundari, if any of this is wrong, Vroj, please tell me, but I got it from your website, so hopefully it's all right.
It's too accurate, yeah.
Okay, so just to get to know her quickly, at the age of 16, if this is correct, you were given your first internship for Julia Rivera's Horton Dance Company called Contemporary Motions in New York.
Yeah.
Wow. Then you went on to study at Rotterdam Dance Academy, where you received a scholarship for the Jacob's Pillow Ballet Program in the USA.
Yeah.
And Rotterdam's an incredible place. I went to North Sea Jazz Festival three times. And although it's a very expensive festival, I love Rotterdam as a place.
Yeah, it's an amazing place for musicians, for sure. Yeah.
It's a great place for the arts. So that's all very exciting. And then you went on to have your choreography presented in Cannes, and you were working as an apprentice for many prestigious personalities and companies, such as the Scapino Ballet in Rotterdam as well. Oh, Vroj is the leader of the Samadhi Dance Company and an incredible soloist in your own right. And you've been working with incredible people such as Deepak Chopra and many composers, photographers and designers. And you have received a plethora of awards for your contribution to the arts so far. And I mean, it's just such an honor and a privilege to have someone of your caliber on the Take Note podcast.
Wow.
And is that all correct though? Was any of that wrong?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, all the extra descriptions, I'm not sure, but you know, things actually happened. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't mention the flying carpet or anything, just because I thought...
Yeah, no. Nothing untrue in activity, so to say, in events. But yeah, I mean, thank you for receiving me so kindly. It's a little bit like shy making, but that happened. Yeah.
Okay, that's amazing. Well, what a pleasure to have you here.
We're so grateful. And, thank you.
Yeah,
for
so grateful.
Taking
me
the
too,
time
me
and,
too,
and
me too.
It's. I can just echo what Kelly's saying, how inspiring it is seeing an artist of such integrity and of your caliber really so devoted to your art, and how that in and of itself is making such an impact in the world, especially because of the intention that's fueled behind it. And I've never met you, and I can already just tell that. So thank you so much for being here with
nice.
Us.
Nice.
Yes, this is what we do. We start the Take Note podcast by showering you with love.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Until you're melted, and then we extract all the ghee.
Well, I'm just so touched that you experienced my contribution, which for me is like, of course, you know, it has a whole story behind it, but you receive it so enthusiastically and so openly. And of course, that's more than, you know, an artist can wish for, that it seems to matter, you know, to others. That I don't really try to aim for that because that's a lot of pressure. But if it does happen, it's beautiful and it's overwhelming. I'm passing it on to the divine because otherwise I'm going to melt away for sure. But thank you so much.
It's really interesting, actually. We're gonna fire some rapid. What are we calling it? A quick fire or rapid fire questions? What is it?
Yeah, quick fire.
Okay, so we're gonna bombard you with some quick fire questions.
Okay,
but before we do,
go on, Ananda.
I was just gonna say, welcome to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. It's early in the morning for a lot of the US where I'm located. It's kind of middle of the day for Europe, which is nice. So we're going to get probably a different like group of live listeners, which I'm excited about. If you are listening, please type in, let us know where you're coming from. Let us know where you're hearing from. Please subscribe to the Bodhika page as well as share this podcast because, We are so much interested in connecting with the broad audience of aesthetic appreciators and being able to, as I said at the beginning, deepen our experience of life through the creative arts, specifically in the creative arts and bhakti. So please, write in where you're coming from. I see people from all over. We got some folks from Alachua. We got some folks from Chile. We have some folks from the UK. I mean, it's wonderful. So, thank you for tuning in.
And where are you, Brad? You're in Belgium or Holland?
In Holland, yeah. But actually, my mother's from Chile, so that was really nice. It's pretty cool that we have some Chileans.
Yeah. Yeah, our friend Fran. Fran's from Chile, and she's tuning in.
It's super cool.
Wow. So, we just wanted to get to know you a little bit before we dive into the deep stuff. So we have some questions. So the way this works, Braj, is you can pass if you either can't think of an answer or don't want to answer, and we can just go on to the next one. But it's just like you don't have to think about it too much. We'll just ask, and whatever comes to your end is good. So Ananda, you can start with the first question. I'll let you.
Okay.
Do the
favorite
other.
Childhood memory.
Woo. So many. Reading the books of Roald Dahl.
Wow. And Quentin Blake. Good artist.
Ah, okay. I don't know.
I think Quentin Blake did the art for Roald Dahl. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, okay. Then I know. Yeah. No, I was like obsessed with him. Like his books and drawings. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Favorite piece of clothing? Do you have a favorite piece of clothing?
Oh, that's like a sweater, like this training sweater that you can also wear outside without it looking a pajama. But it's just so comfortable and it changes. It changes per season. It depends also on the memories that the things I experience with the sweater. But at the moment I have this one. Yeah. It's like green. It's crazy printed. It has like a tiger on it. It's kind of wrong, but I love it.
Okay, some of these questions get a little silly.
No problem. I like it.
But before we get too silly, what is your favorite dessert?
Oh, I have a new one at the moment. Like it's this, like, but yeah, it's a bit silly. But it's like, you know, the raspberries with the non-fat Greek yogurt, and then like, you know, this vegan pancake around it, and then it gets all mushy, and then like,
whoa,
honey, and it's like, you know. So.
A pancake around yogurt and fruit?
Yeah.
They do weird stuff in that part of the world.
No, it's my own creation. I won't blame my culture.
It's your own creation.
Wow. I was like, this seems like a good idea, and my body agreed. So yeah, it's very healthy as well. It has like the red and, you know, black fruits in it. And yeah. So.
My goodness. Okay. Pancake, yogurt.
Fruit salad.
What a catchy name.
Looks good. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask a silly one. So, would you rather have ants in your pants or worms in your socks?
The socks one, yeah.
Me too.
Oh. Easier to get rid of than the whole pack.
That's a good point. Ants in the pants could, and the ants bite.
Yeah.
I don't really want to think of that one, but.
Yeah. Okay. Would you rather live in a tent for a year or ride a warthog all the way to Japan?
What's a warthog?
It's like a large pig.
You must have seen them in India. There's lots in Vrindavan.
But say if you had a pig that like would let you, ride it.
I think the tents. I like tents. So yeah. Okay. I'm not sure about Japan and the pig, but yeah.
I told you these questions get ridiculous. One,
Ananda.
They're super creative. Like
I think you said that one, Kelly. I'm pretty sure that was yours.
Probably. That was probably mine. Okay, is was that? Did I ask that question, Ananda, or was that you?
I just asked that. You go.
Okay, great. So, what, in your opinion, what's the most courageous thing you've ever done?
Ooh, wow. Except that there's a lot that I just simply can't fix. And be like completely fine with saying I can't, because I'm a very much I can person. But I just like recently really experienced that humility is the I can't. It's really not up to me. And it takes all my bravery to accept that. I'm not really there yet with the acceptance. But I know that's the truth. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's a really good answer.
It's a beautiful experience, but yeah, it's a must.
Okay, so in the line of the tent, what is your first experience of camping out?
Whew, in my own garden at home. Like when I was a kid, I was like, I wanted to go on adventure, but I wasn't given permission to move away with that idea from the house. So we created like a fort in the garden, and I thought it was just spectacular. The creation. It was like, so yeah, that one, that was my first.
I've got so many memories of like being young and building really insignificant structures, but just it feeling so incredible and majestic. Yeah. And just all it takes is a couple of pillows and a blanket, and you literally feel like you're the ruler of the universe or something.
Yes.
Yeah. I used to take the couch cushions. And I always remember feeling like there was so much room and space underneath those couch cushions, even though it was like, you know, I couldn't fit there now, but it always just felt like a huge cavern palatial like fort.
I love that. I have to share though that I remember the first time doing that, it was simply putting up my leg as a little kid, and it created a tent.
Oh,
and I kept the leg up and put all my stuffed animals around me, and that was our gathering.
Wow.
Like that would seem very easy. Now I'm thinking that's not really something you could keep up for a long time.
It would take some strength.
Yeah, but that was very simple, like leg up tent, you know. So
okay, so there's a couple more. Okay, I'm going to skip that one. I'm going to ask you if you could be an animal for one day, which animal would you be?
I have like a tie between a deer, because I would love to like hop like they do.
Like, majestic animals.
Yeah. And just go like, ka-dung. And a bird. I mean, a bird. Just to be carried by your own wings and to see it all from above. Have the choice also to walk around, that's that too, but also that.
It might be difficult to eat those pancakes though, I don't know.
I would have to like sacrifice that, yeah.
Just for the day, just for one day.
But I could take little teeny bites, I'm sure.
You
could, yeah.
You might have to share with other birds.
I think so, but I think my taste would change though in that body, so I'm not too worried.
Maybe those worms in the socks would become more appealing.
Yeah, it would all come together. So.
Okay,
Hare Krishna.
What is your favorite film that you've ever seen?
Guys, it's not like one choice answer, but Again, I think two. No, I'll just stick to one. It has to be Forrest Gump. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just genius. Like,
Although,
yeah, I have more, but I would have to explain why. So I'll just stick to that one. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. 10 out of 10. Thank you so much for participating.
Oh, it's fun. It's a way to break the tension with these like spiritual questions, and I appreciate that.
It is good. You need some icebreakers.
Yeah, definitely.
So before we delve into it, I just want to say personally, I've had the pleasure of collaborating and working with Braj Sundari a little bit last year, which was really fun, wasn't it, Braj? I had fun anyway.
I loved it.
But there's definitely more I don't know about you than I do know about you, so it's really nice to have this opportunity. So I've got a few questions I wanted to just put out there, and I thought we could just riff and just kind of see what happens. But the main thing I want to consider in this is, like, and hopefully it's relevant to you, Braj, but the, you know, like, persistence and perseverance on the creative path. And so many great stories, not just of artists, but of political personalities, spiritual figures, they exhibit this quality of persistence, perseverance, strength, determination. It's a fantastic virtue. And I would assume, and I believe, that in order to be successful at anything in life, you do need that, you know, some level of perseverance.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to, just to see if this kind of concept applies to you, and if, you know, how you've managed to navigate around different obstacles, perhaps. Well, that maybe I could ask you that first, like, you know, in your career, first off, have you encountered obstacles and insecurities like that? And how, you know, how have you become perhaps a wiser, stronger person through that, managed to, like, stay inspired in your artistic offerings?
I think like 95% or more is that, is obstacles, is like being tested. You know, why are you doing this? And can you keep it up? And that makes you the wiser person, because it's the knowledge put into practice. So I see knowledge, wisdom, just being lived knowledge. So you actually understand the depth of a cliche, because it's so much more than words. And the experience of it, you know, it's depending also on, you know, your dharma, your mission, what is it that your heart calls for, and that to just give it a term that everybody can maybe just be comfortable with. For me, it's God, but for many people, it's the universe. What is asked from you? So if it's in line with what is asked from you, what your heart is calling for, and what really inspires you, that will be your mission. And if it's a big one, meaning concerning more people, not just yours, so that's the collective karma, there will be many, many tests. Because when it's a big mission, I believe you're given a big amount of power. And if that power is selfish, you can't really complete your missions, kind of slapped until it becomes more selfless. That's painful. But that also brings you to that manifestation of the mission. So, and if you have a bigger mission, probably you have a bigger ego as well, because you're convinced that you can do it. So the false ego is also a bit more inflated. So that's how I believe that these tests are also to free us from that burden of the false ego's conviction in that mission. Right now in the day, I am experiencing the tests and the obstacles as almost like a default mode. It's not that it ever stopped. And there's an urgency to be wise. It's not like, you know, let me be wise about this. It's more like, if you're not going to be wise about it, you're going down. You know, like it will devour you. It will make you feel depressed. It's just no way around it, or hopeless. And that's a very dangerous place to be. And there's no hope. There's no faith. It's just like, what's the point? And I think all of us at one point can experience this. So
Just that first point is incredible about like, yes, it's like, it's definitely something I've experienced regarding like Dharma. Is there seems to be a resistance to it almost, you know, you were saying you have this like calling from God or the universe or whatever you want to say. And depending on how big or small that is in the project and how many people might be involved. There's definitely, I guess, a part in everyone's life where we might experience some kind of resistance to fully committing to your Dharma or, you know, fully going for it. But has it always been clear for you, like dance or, you know, like creativity, or have you felt resistance ever and maybe tried other things? Or?
To be honest, as a child, my mom was a dancer. So, you know, it was like you play piano, you go to dance, and we were like given all these tools to be creative. So we were writing at home, making our own dramas, draw. She was like, there's no such thing as boredom. Only boring people get bored. So she would just like, you know, and I really didn't like dance. I didn't understand the use of it, the point, like why would the arm be there and why is that a rule? I was very reluctant to do it. And I was really kind of obsessed with literature and poetry and playing piano. That was my thing. And when I discovered that it was so free, like the frailty of playing classical piano is like, there's no mistake allowed. I felt very cramped up. And then one day I remember receiving a book about ballet, the whys, you know, why ballet has that or that, and also the history of it, how it evolved. And I was just like, the science of it, you know, for me, the science and the art, when they come together, it's just this genius. And I realized that dance was a genre where all these art disciplines come together. So you are like, you are creating words in space. You are the music. You even design is there. It all comes together when it's done in the right way. And I realized that it was not enough for me to feel the piano. I wanted to like be the music. And with that, it was so much science and knowledge about the body and about, you know, spatial relation. It was just like, okay, this is what I'm gonna do. This is what I'm gonna do. And this was like poetry in motion, like literally. And I discovered that from day one, I had all these obstacles. I was given so many no's. I was rejected, mainly just because how I was built. And I was like, no, it's not happening. I'm doing this. And I remember breaking my leg. And then it was like, now you really can dance. And actually at that moment decided, I'm going to be a dancer. That's what it is, and that's what I'm going to do. And I never had this because I want to be big and I want to change the world. It was just more like everything came together for me. And but to be honest, the more I became professional, the more I questioned if I wanted to continue, because there's a sacrifice in making your passion your profession. What do you do then with your free time that you would use for your passion? You don't. It's all just about now results. And where's the playfulness? So I still ask myself that question. I still try to look if I could do other things. And every time I come back when I teach or when, oh my God, there's never going to be something that I understand and love as much as this. So this is what it is. And I thank you that this is what it is. I'm not going to complain about it. You know, yeah.
I want to appreciate, take it back a little bit and just how it's relating to this point you're making. You articulated this idea that the urgency to be wise. And I really liked that, how you articulated that. And I thought of it again as you were describing kind of as your passion becomes a profession, right? And also connected to this idea of Dharma. It's like we you know, there's a circumstantial situation that all of us have kind of been put into. Mm-hmm. And that circumstance has been, you know, been kind of formed around our desire, has been formed around our experiences in previous situations and our current situation, right? So we have this innate kind of nature of our circumstance, mm-hmm. that our innate self, the self beyond circumstance, is using to really grow in to real love, to grow into, you know, understanding who we are on the deepest level.
Yes.
And so just one thing that I've been meditating on recently, it's like that dharma is like, we don't have the right to not do it.
Yes.
We don't have the right to not share it. So then wisdom for me is like, it's that childlike, you know, maintaining that childlike play and curiosity, that becoming the primary, you know, while all the while focusing in, harnessing and being able to share that effectively with others, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So I was just appreciating that point of the urgency of wisdom, right? The urgency of really applying what it is that I do and feel and experience and know, right? But being able to develop an urgency for wisdom, that let that become embodied.
Beautiful, beautiful. I mean, you just actually gave a very nice description. What for me, the balance is between structure, discipline, and playfulness, which I always see as your technique is like the structure, your house, and then the soul can play in that house. But we need to have structure, we need to have technique, and that is willpower, and that is also, it's like this balance between willpower, I'm gonna do this, and respecting, collaborating with your imperfect vehicle that has its limits, so you don't impose, you listen to it. So in a way, for me, the playfulness is, what does this knowledge mean? And keep gaining knowledge. That's the structure, and then the playfulness is experiencing it, which is very unpredictable. So we need that structure. That's also our sadhana. We need that kind of regularity, that safety for when it gets a mess, when it's chaotic.
Yeah, like that freshness of discovery.
Yes.
That learning is discovery. It's not, you know, that, and that sadhana, like, I feel like for me, this word sadhana is like a practice towards a goal, right? We have like a goal in mind. But simultaneously, there's this element of continuous discovery, and that's like the playfulness. That, okay, how can I practice in such a way that I'm discovering something new? If I practice as an obligation, like by force, it doesn't work, and I'm going to give it up quite quickly, right?
Yeah,
but I appreciate that you can, because you made this point about ballet. Like as a child, it was like, why does the arm have to be like this? And why does this, you know, but then there was a point at which you saw more of the why in that, and kind of what the implication was. So then that sadhana became like, oh, how can I embody that more? How can I discover that more right now? And yeah, thank you. That was brilliant.
No, and I like what you actually believe, that practice is the goal. That it is the goal, that it's not the outcome that really will give us satisfaction. It's how we experience the practice, because even the discovery, it can only be discovered by curiosity. The curiosity is every time we come to a point of I can't and frustration, we have to there's a choice to transform that into wonder. What am I missing? How could I make this easier and more fun? Because then you tap into this, the entity called inspiration. And if there's no inspiration, it's, and the inspiration comes from the why and what does it do to me beyond like also my thinking. When there's inspiration, there's like the possibilities just start growing and growing, and there's no, and you get surprised instead of the, you know, I always say with dance, there's two ways to look at it. One is like make it or break. Like halen of falen, we say in Dutch, is to fail or to just make it. So, you know, I have it, for instance, with an exam. If you fail, it's drama. If you make it, it's like, oh, okay, next. It's not really victorious. It's just more like, oh, I made it. But the drama is much more like emphasized, no? But the other option is to be surprised with what could happen and what comes to you. So instead of aiming for that result and that outcome, which you can make or it you feel, you see what happens. You're curious to the process, and that freedom, that space that opens up in that mind state, first of all, really enhances the chances of it working, but also your experience becomes much richer. And in the end, it is about the experience. It's not about the outcome because it's not in your control. But your experience is the quality of life. So I try to aim with the dancers and myself. What is your experience? Can that be richer? Can that be more free? Can it be more loving, more grateful? Because the making or failing, it's not really up to you anyway.
It seems like a lot of the human experience is having a relationship with the uncertain. And like this thought was shared with me recently, actually, about fear and faith.
Right? Oh my God.
And how fear is like a negative relationship with uncertainty, and faith is a positive relationship with uncertainty. And I really like that, really like struck a chord with me, because thinking about like one thing I personally want to achieve with this Take Note podcast is working out how creativity fits with spiritual life as well, and like specifically Bhakti, if you're a practitioner of Bhakti yoga. And so we find the same, like, perhaps two paths in Bhakti. We have, like, Vaidhi Bhakti, which is, like, we have rules, structure, regulation. And then we have, like, Raganuga, which is more, there's more stress-based put on the spontaneous side, you know. And so you find this also in artistic disciplines, no? Where it's kind of, you know, there's the rules and the regulations, but there's also the curiosity and the you know, you mentioned this word inspiration, and I was reading this this word inspiration. I think the original Latin is inspiro, which literally means to breathe in the breath of God or something, to be filled with the breath of God, you know. So that's really interesting. Like, I don't know if you could talk a bit about that, this relationship with uncertainty, and how it's almost like fear and faith seem to be on a spectrum. That you can kind of like, you can transmute fear into faith, or faith can become fearful, kind of. But
beautiful. Ah, beautiful topics. I'm just like letting it sink in. No, it's so beautiful. It's so nice to have conversations like this. Thank you for doing this also, by the way.
That's okay. Carry on.
Yeah. You know, the word inspiration, I love what you just shared. It's the same like with the word emotion, that the original meaning of it, that where it came from, it's so rich, and we have to be reminded of that, or I feel like we want to be reminded of that, because it's so let me just remind me again what you were asking.
Well, I think what I'd really like to hear about is, like, you were talking also about responsibility, you know, and it seems like now the, especially like the Samadhi Dance Company is like a really big part of your life. And I'm sure there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. But is there also an aspect of uncertainty when you're with your students, when you're kind of juggling finance, health, other people, COVID, whatever it is, you know, there must be aspects of uncertainty. So how do you manage to like maybe step away from fear and step into faith when you have such a responsibility as like a dance company or something?
Yeah. I mean, this question is like, you know, it's funny because last night I was writing like a little poem about fear and fate, fear and faith, fate. Cause you know, especially like we have this other pandemic going on, which is fear. The whole world is just in fear, and we created all kind of systems and instructions and devices to deal with fear, to go against fear. And, you know, I chose a profession that is based on uncertainty, and it plays with uncertainty and it challenges uncertainty. And there's this deep conviction of something that you can't see, that you can't even display yet with your body. It has to be manifested over time. So you have this constant collaboration with a higher power. Mm-hmm. For me, the whole creative process is parallel to spiritual life. Where you are in your spiritual life will manifest in not just the manifestation of the art, but how you are doing, how you're dealing with the process and how you are experiencing it. Again, like, at one point, I've never decided to have my own company. It was not like one day I was 24, like, yeah, I'm so confident, I'll just lead a group of people, and because I'm so sure of my own vision. It came from health reasons. I've always struggled with my health, and I had so many injuries, and I start learning that this injury was like this blessing in disguise for me to gain more knowledge about this vehicle, and something that I didn't understand within my own upbringing, that is bhakti. I come from a bhakti family. There's a lot of emphasis on spiritual life. You know, material life is inferior, but that needs to be understood because it's really still God's energy. You can't say what's inferior, so whatever, just do what I want and don't even take it seriously. This vehicle needs to be honored. This is a bridge for us to practice spiritual life. And dancers have this insane training. The tradition is based on, how does it feel? Does it hurt? Good. Something is working. That's completely unintelligent. And
I remember like going to, what was it, like kickboxing or something as a young boy, and I'd walk past a room in the gym where the boys and girls would be doing ballet, and you just see the instructor like bending these people's legs over their heads until they're like snapping.
Yeah.
And I would just be like, okay, I'm going to stick with the kickboxing because that looks a little bit more chill. You know?
It's less violent. I mean, we're still like, Our evolution is way behind other arts genres. And it means the consequence of that means that a dancer is trained to be fundamentally insecure. That the moment you doubt yourself, that's where you should always be. That means there's literally like a quote that we would have in the studio that said that the moment a dancer is satisfied is the death of its progress. This is so extremely, you know, that's why I went into yoga. I could not, everything, I was like doing it all and getting where I needed to be, but getting more and more depressed and really suffering. And my mom took me to Radadish, a bhakti community in Belgium. And I realized that I wanted to keep dancing, but I remember thinking I'd rather go into the flower world, sell flowers, because it makes everyone happy, then continue in this self-destructive nonsense just in order to get an applause. It was just insanity. For me, it just felt like remnants of the time of the court, you know, where you have the king and like, dance for me, and then off with your head. And I really got, I still have this longing to do something for the art world, which is also why I teach. Because I don't think of changing the entire dance world, but this dancer in front of me deserves to get the love that it naturally should receive for their efforts. And dance is something, it is something spiritual. It is the spirit moving the vehicle. So when I decided to have this, I just decided to do my own work, but based on the philosophy of bhakti yoga. And that attracted a group of people. And then they asked me to perform with them. And what's the name of your troupe? And I said, and I was reading about Ayurveda. And I remember reading about Samadhi thinking, oh, wow, that's kind of what we aim for. I said, the Samadhi Dance Company. And they published that. And then it was that. And now it's 15 years later. And I don't understand really. even last year, I decided to, like, you know, with COVID, to take a big break. I really needed to think about things. And then Kaylee, remember seeing Kaylee pass by for the first time, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to collaborate. And then he, like, wrote to me a month later. So it is bigger than you. So the uncertainty is the blessing. And the moment we start planning, like, way ahead of ourselves, which is what we're told to do by society, that's when all of that stress starts kicking in, and then it becomes fear. Mm. I will not manage that plan. And then there's no surprising element. There's no wonder. But to get to your question, sorry. The fear is a distraction of something else. Mm. There is underneath the fear a primary emotion that needs to be addressed. The fear is just a secondary emotion that will just drive us crazy. Mm. The fear, in a way, is, you know, there's intelligent fear and unintelligent fear. The intelligent one tells you not just to cross the street. The unintelligent one gets all mental and distracts you from what's really going on. So in a way, I learned, and I learned the hard way, that fear is asking for a conversation. Mm. And you say, hey, I see you, I hear you. What are you trying to tell me? You're not my enemy. There's nothing in me evil. We all have the same intention. There's no part of me that has its own agenda. It just has, like, maybe a distorted conviction of the approach. Mm. So I see you. What are you telling me? And then there is also fear that is healthy. I want to do right, and I'm afraid I will not do right because you're a good person. So that's a great intention. Now, how can we use that intention in a different way that is inspiring and not paralyzing? Mm. We're afraid of death. Yeah, so why? Because we want to live a meaningful life. So let's do that, no? So then this fear of death is a good thing. Mm. So use it with wisdom instead of, like, fight the fear, which is, it's nonsense. It's just a distraction. It's just an energy. And faith comes with that when you realize, yeah, it's not working, this system. It's not going away. I'm having, like, panic attacks. So maybe I should talk to it and say, you know, hey, we have no idea. We know that we're going to die. And what if we have faith in living lovingly? Let's see. Let's try. And then see how you feel, and you will feel better. So then that's proof of faith. Mm.
I like again how you're making this comment that fear is an indication for a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think when we take fear rather as a dictation or as a direction rather than an invitation. I think that's where it becomes, like, an unhealthy level of fear. When, like, my fear kind of directs me how I move rather than my fear invites me to, like, look deeper.
Beautiful.
One thing I've been thinking about also, and it's in this kind of, to the point you're speaking about, I guess to our general topic about persistence, right? And this thought of, I could have an unhealthy level of fear and then not do anything. And recently a coach told me that, she had this intention to fill a program. She wanted to fill a program. She wanted 32 people in this program. And so she made a list of 100 people, called 100 people, and ended up at, by the time the program came, filled it up, 32 people. And she said, not one of those 32 people came from the list of 100. Right.
Wow.
So, yes. I'm wondering if you could kind of discuss a little bit the relationship between our endeavor, our endeavor in persistence, and kind of the actualization of our desires, so to speak, and your experience in that.
Very nice. What I repeat often to myself and my dancers and students, that what you desire is what you will get, but not in the way you expect it and not at the time that you expect. Mm. So that's when we have to open it up. Yeah.
It's so unfair. Why is life like that?
Yeah, and it's funny because what we get is actually much better. Huh. But if you're in that unfair thing, we're not going to see it. We might miss out. Mm. there's so many stories about this, that all these tools are given constantly to us, but again, we're so fixed on how it should be. The word should is like, I'm very anti-should. I came from the whole should, you should look like that, should, and it's like a violent word. You just don't know, and that's where the humility kicks in. You don't know. Isn't that a wonderful place to be? If you did, why don't you do better? You should do better if you know better. So you don't know. You do your best. And then just really focus on being in a place where you every day can see how much choices you have and what's manifesting in reality. Now, the reality is it's hard work to see reality because we are so conditioned. We are so colored by the glasses that we're wearing today, and often that's also fate. The mistakes we make, I often say the mistakes are to be made, you know. That's another thing. Sometimes we do all these endeavors and they fail, it went wrong, it was not, and that's maybe or probably or as it should be, should as it is. So that's how it was supposed to be. So you do your endeavors. How are you doing your endeavors? What's your mind state? What's your intention? Are you lovingly in that process? You know, how is your communication with people? How are you feeling about it? And then the outcome, try to see it as it is, as it is. So there's no, but, and then no, let go of that. It might be already what you were trying to do. I will give you a little example. I'm creating something new and we're finalizing it this week. And I had this idea with Music Mix that the song is supposed to start at that point. And something weird was happening with my program that it would not start at that point. It just kept starting way earlier during the text. And I was like, no! So it got exported. It remained. It remained. I took all the track. I'm like, this is voodoo. It's not. I was like, I can't understand. There's something wrong with my computer, but it stayed. So I kind of unchecked the selection. I thought this is useless. We're in the rehearsal, and I suddenly went, that track, that mix. Let me try it with that mix. And the magic. And I'm so grateful at that moment that the universe was so persistent on showing me, you don't know better. Let me help you. I'm constantly helping you. And then you know what happens when you realize that you didn't do it? You can really receive it. It's not yours anymore. I could sit there and go, oh, this is genius. You know, I don't feel like, oh, I did something genius. It was absolutely not mine, but I'm honored to be the vessel. So it's the best part that you don't know and let it come to you. It is the best part, actually.
That's so profound. I'm really interested in this part of your journey you were speaking about. Like you were mentioning you broke your leg or something, or and you said that was the part where you just, this is what I want to do. I'm so interested in that aspect of not just creative people, but just people in general. It's just like, even though you've had, like, you know, you were saying this this thing where you're trying to get the music in the right place and it's not working, but you just have to kind of surrender to reality and surrender to the situation. But it sounds like when you broke your leg, you didn't surrender to the situation and you said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm determined, you know. And there are so many aspects of the human journey and the creative journey and then the spiritual creative journey where it's kind of like sometimes you have to surrender to the arrangement and sometimes you have to persist. And I often struggle to know when to make what decision, you know. Like sometimes it feels like, no, I should just give up, but then I felt like, no, I shouldn't have given up. And vice versa. So I'm just wondering, because it seems like you have integrated spiritual life with your creative or professional life in a very good way. But then how do you make that decision, you know, if like I should just surrender to this, or I should keep persisting, I should persevere and until I get my way, kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a method you have, or is it just
you know, of course I definitely apply, you know, in intellect.
Mm-hmm.
But if I give that example, you know, when you about the broken leg, it was not a surrender, because having a broken leg doesn't mean you can't dance.
Mm.
It's just an obstacle. And it just showed me how much I wanted it.
Mm.
And not to be amazing. Because having the broken leg was kind of an insurance, like guaranteeing me that I will not have the perfect dance body. I was actually, you know, academics were very easy for me. It was like I never really had a challenge with that. So this was the first time, like, no, it's not going the way you want. And I still wanted to do it. And I thought that was actually what enticed me, that it's not going the way you want. You're going to have to really accept you're not going to be the best and still try to be the best. And what does it mean to be the best? The best of the group or the best of yourself? Mm. So it was not that I said, oh, I don't surrender. I don't give up on what I feel beyond my thinking and what everybody's telling me as what I really would like to do. I think that when we're young, we have much more innocence in dreaming. We don't judge ourselves when we're like, well, one day I want to win an award or I want to win a Nobel Prize. We're just like, dream ahead. And nobody's saying you're so arrogant or you're so selfish. Mm. And then we lose that. But what if that's just what you want to do? And then comes the journey. That's just what you want to do. And I was told, oh, you'll never be, you know, doing ballet and all of that. And then I end up in the ballet company. And that's when I discovered that these people are, you know, my example, but there was a lot of unhappiness. Mm-hmm. I was sad that my inspirations were so unhappy. I felt that was a much more, that was a bigger problem than having a ballet body. So I started thinking like, but then what is the point? And I think that's many times in our life, what is the point? You know, if you don't have, you know, live with the cause, otherwise you don't live with effect. You know, what's the purpose? So my spiritual life is my creative life. That's dangerous though as well. So your question, when do I know? You don't. You have to experience and you have to try. And how I listen to the signs, like the signals, is when I start getting really, just angry. Then I'm like, no, you have to let go now. You are, you know, our biggest problem is that in the smallest ways, the biggest ones we can actually see, but we try to play God.
Mm-hmm.
Even if how it should be, because you're now playing judge. Or even when you're like, well, I should have done that. Well, again, you're playing judge, you're playing God. And it's tricky because it's in the small things. So I love trying to discover the puzzle. I love playing detective. I love finding solutions. That's why I also have a problem with that, because I really can see it. I have the vision and I'm convinced that if I see it and I can do it, I should do it.
Uh-huh.
And then comes a point, especially if it's 1 o'clock at night, you feel so good. You're in the zone, which is also a dangerous place to be.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, I want to be in the zone, but it's also an inferior samadhi.
Mm.
And it's like, no, I can't stop. Sleep is not important. No, I don't have to eat. This is so important. I am God. I am in control. I have to make this happen. It has a different energy.
Mm.
And I'm blessed that I get pain in the body or I get sick. That's my blessing. And my body starts, that's it. You know, the body is just genius. It has this direct connection with the laws of nature. We say material nature, but actually it's the laws of nature or the laws of the spirit. And it just, I pay the price straight away. And then I know like, yeah, I need to let that happen.
Mm.
And then what happens, I take the witness position and then I get different, different ideas even. But it's every piece I've made, and it's been over 16 now, has a different method, a different formula, a different, there's no like, now I'm going to do it like that. and this is how it should be, and my plan is that, and no, I create structure and it changes. You have to be able to change your mind, because inspiration is its own entity and it comes to you or not. You can't like command it. So it is a constant like listening, and I just check it with, okay, we know, is this mode of passion? am I feeling happy with this? Is it necessary? Can it wait for another night? Am I convinced that I'm the one to make it happen? Do I have pain? Do I feel ill? Oh, this is the best one. Am I getting tired from it? Like the bad tired, the drain, the brain fog, the something is, no, this is not inspiring me. It's not playful. Okay, let it go, start again. And the other one is, oh, this is tough. Oh, this is, oh my goodness. Oh, this is challenging. Okay, let's go. Let's try. It's a different energy. Okay, let's bite into this. Okay, we can do it. And dancers love that one. We like the struggle. We embrace the struggle.
Do you know, do you know a devotee? I think she's called Arissa Kaylee.
Yeah, she's my, how do you say in English? She's my family.
Okay, great. So I don't know if any, like, I don't know her very well, but I know a bit about her story, and maybe you can elaborate more. Hopefully we're talking about the same person, but she was originally a gymnast or something. And she wanted to start getting into some more kind of performance art, and she got into archery, and she was training to be an archer and do gymnastics. And she, what happened? She broke her arm or something like that, or she had some fatality, and she was forced then to make a decision: carry on doing this archery performance, or do I not? But I can't use my arm; it's broken. So she started practicing with feet. And she became a foot archer, and she didn't plan for that, right? But now she's like the best foot archer in the world. She's been on TV in front of millions of people. She's traveled the world. She's been to incredible events and collaborated with incredible people. And she's like mastered her art, kind of thing. It's incredible. If you haven't seen her, she can like balance, do a handstand on her hands, and then she can like shoot a bow and arrow with her feet. Like, anyway, it's crazy.
She's fearless.
And it was that situation. She, you know, it was like, I'm going to do this thing. And then the universe just stepped in and said, no. And then she said, I'm not having any of that. But she persisted, and she became this renowned kind of performer and athlete.
Well,
carry on. I thought it kind of resonates that story with you a little bit as well.
No, Arissa, she's a powerhouse. So she's a cousin of my half sister, and for what you just said about like the universe says no, for me the no is not like it's over, like with the broken leg, but it's like change your direction. Like, don't give up on what you want, but just approach it from a different place. So be wise, wise perspective. And she's like that. She's just like, okay, this situation, what's reality, and how can I just work with that reality? But she loves that challenge. She bites into it, and that's what I mean with the okay, now I'm gonna have to really endeavor. But it's a different energy, and if you meet her, she's so sweet and humble. You can see that it's all coming from the character. Like, character is for me number one. It's number one, then everything else comes. And you see, that's why she gets empowered. You know, I believe when the universe sees that you're ready for it and you want to sacrifice for it, and your heart is like as strong as the mind's power, it goes, okay, here you go, here's your blessing, here's the genius, you can work with it. But you have to let it know that I'm qualified, I'm ready for that, for this mission.
This is reminding me, because something that keeps coming up for me as you're talking, and I was thinking about it also with this idea of persistence. But we have to give the universe, we have to give God, we have to give Krishna something to work with.
Yeah.
Right. And it may not manifest in how we expected it to manifest. It may not become what we exactly expected it to become, right? But when we put our endeavor, when we put our intention kind of into the fire of sacrifice, so to speak, right, then that's something to work with. If we give up and we just don't do anything, then there's nothing really to work with.
Exactly. Right?
Then, so I just keep hearing this thing, and like persistence is, you know, like when you broke your leg, it's like, okay, so then you could have stopped, you could have just done something else, but you persisted in a way, and then all of a sudden your path manifested in a unique way, right? And because you were giving the divine something to work with, you were giving some kind of fodder for the fire of the divine will to manifest something beautiful in your life. And I think this, for me at least, has been a recent meditation on persistence. It's like, okay, I can't control the situation. I can't control the environment. I can't even I can definitely not control the outcome, but I can put something on the board. I can put something on the table. I can put myself in the game and allow myself to be moved and used as an instrument. And it's, I was thinking of, as we're talking of your friend Orisa, and just as an archer, right? Like the example is often given as the bow. It's like, make me the bow, right? But the bow has to be available and has to like be sturdy enough so that the archer can pull it back mm-hmm. and fire it, right? At the design target. And the bow's responsibility is to, you know, stay together, have a point, you know,
yeah.
withhold the tension of the bow being pulled back. So
super, I love that. And I love that Orisa came up in this story, because it's like also another example that your art and your mission, it doesn't also have to be super deep and like yeah. you know, trying to like heal the world. It's like, no, boom, I just want to shoot this arrow.
Yeah.
And with that, really inspire people. And
well, that is a big part of it, I think, is like, you might not necessarily be doing something for someone, but overcoming your own obstacles can be an inspiration for others to overcome theirs. Yes. You know?
I love that. Yeah. Living your own. Because that's another thing that we tend to think that it only has like a value if it's really big.
Mm.
And that the original intention is almost like saintly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really what Dharma is. That's why we also get this confusion about, you know, the hierarchy of functions, of duties, is like the cleaner is inferior to the politician, but it doesn't work like that. We all have our own function, and the more it's a collaboration between both, as both are needed, the more actually we can really start appreciating also what everybody's Dharma is without identifying with it, which is of course another challenge.
That's another podcast.
Mm. Exactly.
So what do we have, what can we expect, I guess, from Samadhi Dance Company kind of coming up, and like, what are some of the projects that you're working on, and where do people find that? Where's a place that we can direct people to kind of see the upcoming projects you're working on?
I mean, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. We have a website. Of course, I hope I'll do something with Kaylee again in the future. I mean, it was, you know, his work is exactly what I hope for the world, how to present bhakti and arts, that freshness, and it's so authentic, and it's life-loving. And it was simple. It was just like simple at the same time, yet profound. And I always feel like that's actually what I'm. Yeah, and it's what I'm really desiring, that it's simple yet profound, because within now even more uncertainty and even more fear and even more depression, to get all complicated, and it just seems really unwise. So, and next year it will be 15 years Samadhi. And you know, we haven't been funded since 2011, so I never really know what I can do with that, but I always have people who want to work with me, which is another inconceivable thing. But I did that also comes with the problem, because then you're like, well, if everybody wants to work with me, how can I say no? But it doesn't work like that. At one point, you actually have to be like, I don't owe the world something, because that's their desire. I have to be more honest with myself about what I can do. Because of course I would love to be like, superwoman and do all these things, and I've tried. I paid the price. I still am. I have some injuries that I'm dealing with. And so next year, instead of going big, like at our 10 years anniversary, it was really big. We had like 38 artists and a huge show. I want to go small and I want it to be simple. But with that, have all of that space and playfulness to be profound. And it will be an ode to literature, actually. I want to bring in short stories and poems of different writers that really inspire me and have like short, it's like a short novel ballet. So I'm excited about that, because it will just be me and Victor, another dancer. I've always had these big teams, but it's very difficult for me. I'm a very sensitive person. I can really feel people. So I don't want to be captain of a big ship. I just want to have fun and celebrate. And I'm really actually researching more and more how dance can become more and more of value to today's world. So not just holistic dance, but also the creational part. Like, what can these creations do for the world? What do I want to feel and see as well? Sometimes I have more pleasure seeing my student of 8 improvise than these big, expensive, heavy productions that cost so much money and time. And why? How can we do that differently? And how can we connect people to what I really believe is the wealth of life? And that's connecting with our spirits. And I mean, that's how I see spirituality, like what the spirit is asking for. So that's basically what I'm trying to do at the moment. And I'm very much focused on healing. We come with a lot of samskaras, and I believe the universe told me for this lifetime that I have to pay off all of them. So it's extremely challenging, and but I'm honored with that, and just creating more space to be more focused on my spiritual life and my health with that. And but yeah, I invite everyone to come to this. I don't know, it will be online probably, and also in theaters. I have a dream for many years to Gauravani, to Genevieve, for all of us to come together and really create, like, you know, bhakti music, concert and dance. That would be amazing. But that will come, because it's a bigger collective karma. There's enough to do, but I'm also focusing on like the next generation, giving them a space to be the sensitive self, because in the normal dance world, there's not really space for that. It's really a hard world. So yeah, inside, and then see what I can share. I will share online, but I did retract a bit from all of the promotional pressure. There's a lot of stuff with that, the keeping up appearances. I think artists have a lot of pressure with it. Of course, we're blessed that we can share so much and people can access our work, but the regularity of it and the level of it and the envy that it can create, I'm not really sure of that. So I'm not really sharing too much, unless I feel like that's really part of the process. And but I will share when we do it, for sure, and I welcome everyone.
Well, thank you for sharing so much today as well. I feel like you've just been this fountain of like wisdom and knowledge and experience and joy. And it's amazing, like, for me, an hour isn't a lot of time, but I feel like we've kind of been many places in the last hour. It's been really really valuable. And yeah, I really do encourage everyone to go and check out Braj's work, and hate, you know, like hasten yourself, ready yourself for the future as well, because that I think that's really powerful what you're saying about kind of going in a little bit and then coming back out, because even if it's not this like prolific explosion, even if it's something small, the substance that will be found in that after going in and being introspective, like you're saying, that, you know, there's perhaps more substance to seeing an 8-year-old dancer improvise in this big grandiose performance. It can really move people, you know, because it's like authentic. So I am so grateful for you, Raj. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really loved it. It was lovely to meet you, Ananda, and also speak to you, Kaylee. We only had notes. And my little friend saying, hey. Oh. My Reiki master, he was enjoying, he's purring like crazy.
Reiki master, you said?
Yeah.
Ananda, we should like just keep some animals just like down here. Like maybe I could just pull like a rabbit out one day or something. Or just you could just like
a tiny iguana and just like
it's the take up. Note fox.
Amazing. Very wonderful to meet you, Raj, and to hear from you. And I just echo what Kelly said. Thank you for sharing just years of experience and attention given to a craft that's benefiting so many people, and that's done. I'm feeling with such a genuine and sincere heart. It's very refreshing. Mm-hmm. And I'm always excited when I see bhakti yogis like really kind of branching out into more of the world at large, and how important that is. And so I'm very inspired by what you're doing, and I'm grateful that we've been able to steal an hour and 15 minutes of your time to be with us. Thank you for giving that to us.
Before we go as well, I want to mention for everyone watching that we have now officially made a little social media family. At the moment, we're just on Instagram, but go and follow us, Take Note on Instagram. We've got so many incredible guests lined up and incredible topics and a lot planned. So.
And we'll also be, all these podcasts, not only will they be live, but they'll also be recorded on Apple Podcasts and that Stitcher, whatever, wherever else you can get podcasts.
What did you call me?
They're all there. So look forward to that. We'll definitely make the announcement. Thank you for tuning in with us.
Okay. Thank you so much. See you soon. Speak soon, Raj.
Hari Bol. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.